Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we get in the van with Henry
and learn that humor can come from some pretty dark places.
Okay, so I am all healed up.
You are. You're
better.
Looking so much better. Yeah.
And the way you can tell is because what am I holding right here?
You're holding a Guinness.
I am. So that's good. And you have something else today.
Yeah, I actually have a beer by Lost Rhino Brewing Company.
Oh, yeah, Lost
face
Rhino.
Faceplant.
We love them.
Mm-hmm. Drinking a little faceplant. Hopefully that won't happen during this episode.
It happens to a lot of people who drink it, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
You are listening to Rockin' the Suburbs. We're here in the basement. We're drinking some beer, and we are surrounded not only by many, many records, but also several books. We've done
books.
This once before.
It's almost like you're in a nook.
It's on occasion a literary show, right?
Yeah, depending on how loosely you use that term.
That's right, where we visit Patrick's book nook.
That's right. We are going to talk about two books that both came out in 1994, but for some unknown reason, I just read them within the past 3 months.
I think this is fun because you're going to review a couple of books you just read, but they're not necessarily new books.
No.
In fact, not even close.
Like 20-some years old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like the dawn of language. But that's fine because you just now discovered them and you got around to reading them. One of them is Dante's Inferno.
That's right. This might go on for a while, people. Pull up a cushion.
No, what are the books?
So the first one is Henry Rollins' legendary Black Flag tour journal called Get in the Van, On the Road with Black Flag.
This is going to be a lot of fun because I have read Our Band Could Be Your Life, which has a Black Flag chapter in it, but I've never read a whole book about Black Flag, so this is going to be really
exciting. This is not really a book about Black Flag. No. It's really a book about how Henry Rollins experienced his time in Black Flag. So he became lead singer in 1981 when Dez Candana became guitar player, who was the former lead singer. He was in a hardcore band here in Washington, D.C. called SOA. He was the lead singer. He was working at a Haagen-Dazs ice cream store in Georgetown and got the call to be Black Flag's lead singer.
It's just the greatest story.
And from 1981 to 1986, until the band broke up, he was the face of Black Flag. You know what's fascinating about this book? A lot of things are fascinating. It's very intense. It's morbidly funny in some ways, but it's also just really a tour diary. There'll literally be some days where it's like, sitting at Denny's, my head hurts. He tried to make as many entries as he could, right?
Okay.
And he'd write about the show from last night the next day. And, you know, since then, he's published, gosh, I don't know how many books of poetry and spoken
word.
Well,
that's what I say. I mean, he's a well-known writer.
Oh,
he has become some.
Yeah. And later in Black Flag, you know, he talks about when he started doing speaking gigs. And I don't know if you've ever seen him do that, but it's very riveting. I'm going to read a funny excerpt, or at least something I think is representative of the book. Whereas later in the band, a lot of guys started, and Greg Ginn especially, got into marijuana and drugs. Henry never drank. He never smoked. The lens through which he views that experience is just uncluttered completely, right? So it's really fascinating. And he ate at Denny's all the time. So here, as I said, you know, Henry writes in the book in a way that makes you understand how hard it was to be in Black Flag. In 81, 82, 83, they were playing venues and finding venues that no one else knew about, right? And they were playing for little money. Oftentimes, you know, the opening band plus Black Flag plus all the equipment would ride in one van, and they would often sleep in the van if they didn't sleep on someone's floor.
Oh, man.
So here's a representative section from one of the times Henry entered into his journal. He says, I used to believe in destiny and fate. Now I think it's a bunch of bullshit. I want more than the normal human life, but now I see that I have to create it for myself. There will be no more miraculous happenings in my life. I must work on my discipline. I see now that it will be my ace in the hole when needing to go to places in the future. It's all in your head. You have to be able to maintain at all times, no matter what's happening. So those are the kind of things he says. And you can literally, as you read the book, feel him creating himself. So overall, I've read a couple other Black Flag books, not nearly as good as this.
Okay.
And mainly what he really captures in this book is the violence that was around Black Flag. You know, he casually talks about smacking people in the teeth with a microphone, just to wake them up at the beginning of the show. You know what I mean? And the police busting up gigs just because they had a reputation, right? And skinheads coming in Europe to try to fight the band just because they heard they were the toughest thing that came out of America.
And initially, at least, I understand there were a lot of fans of Black Flag who did not like Henry Rollins as the singer, right? And they would just like punch him and grab him and try to and throw stuff at him and things like that on stage, right?
And he took it as a challenge every time they did that, right? And he would go after them,
right? You know, he was a big dude.
Oh my God. One of my good friends told me about a legendary gig at Trax in Charlottesville where Henry Rollins jumped off the stage and chased a kid who was about 15 into the parking lot and punched him. And I always thought that's got to be the craziest thing that ever happened at a Black Flag show. It wasn't even close. And he recounts it in the book.
Oh, really? That particular incident.
He remembers
the
whole thing and he remembers what the kid was saying to him and why he got so mad. And the good times for Henry were like, show was good, we played hard, I earned it tonight. You know, like he satisfied his own incredibly high personal standards.
Now, you saw them play, right?
I've seen them play a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw them once. It was like toward the end of the Henry Rollins era.
Which was the end of the band, essentially.
For a long time, right?
That's right. Yeah.
But I got to tell you, for anyone who grew up in the 90s and thinks of like that, like mosh pit thing, you know, that happened, right? You don't even know.
No, you have
you
no idea.
Don't know. Back in the 80s with, you know, like 80s hardcore, it was seriously violent. It was scary.
You didn't want to go in there unless you really wanted to fight someone or really could stand getting hurt.
My friend Matt and I, Matt was just visiting this week here. We went to that Black Flag show in, I guess that was 86, I want to say. Is that right? At the end?
Yes,
yeah, I think
right
so.
At the end. That was the last tour. Yep.
Matt is, you know, considerably like bigger and more muscular than I am.
I met him. He's a strong guy.
Yeah, he's a solid guy. So he was fine. He thought it was like a challenge to go in there.
I can see that.
I'd go in for like a few seconds and then get out and be like, okay, I did it. Yeah.
Or I would just watch.
Yeah. but seriously, there were dudes like ready to just like.
Oh, it was a very violent thing. Yeah. It was that whole, you know, that aura of violence followed that band throughout their career.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you want me to make a selection here?
Play me some Flag.
A Black Flag song based on what you were talking about. We'll hear that. And then we're going to take a little promotional break. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to talk about what book after that?
We're going to talk about a book about Nico.
Nico. So totally different from Henry Rollins.
Not Nico Case.
That's right. Okay. So here we go. Why don't we hear, this is from the Live 84 album. And based on what you're saying, let's hear My War.
Jim, I think something's wrong with me.
What is it this time?
I dreamt about Courtyard again last night.
You keep having this recurring dream. What is this all about?
You know, Courtyard, Jim, they're the band that kicks off the music for our show. That kicks off when it kicks off.
Yeah, and have they done anything else?
I don't know.
They have, actually. You can find Courtyard albums on iTunes or Bandcamp or Spotify.
Wow.
You can also find a website with all this information about Courtyard. They're a band out of Knoxville, Tennessee, by the way. And you can find them at courtyard42.com. In fact, they have a new album coming out they're working on right now. It's about Bigfoot. It's called Squatch, an Odyssey in Space and Time. I mean, you got to check that out.
That was my dream while I just ordered 2 Courtyard t-shirts.
That sounds both fascinating and horrifying at the same time.
Yes, it does.
Okay, we're back.
We are back.
That was pretty exciting.
Yeah, it was.
And let's go in a different direction with another book here, right?
Yeah. This is not really my war, but...
Well, but it's somebody's war.
It's somebody's war, yeah.
My personal war.
Right. So the book, the other book I want to talk about today is called Nico, The End. And it's written by a guy called James Young, who was a piano player, keyboard player, and worked with Nico from about somewhere in the early 80s until her death. At the time James Young started playing with Nico, Nico was a heroin addict. She remained a heroin addict, you know, up until about the last year of her life. This book is grim and very, very much an unflinching look at what it's like to be around someone who's addicted to heroin. However, it's one of the funniest books I've ever read in my entire life, Jim.
It's one of the funniest.
God. It's literally the funniest book. This guy's writing is comic genius. His timing is impeccable. His humor is dry, but it's perfectly placed. He looks at everything through a twisted English sense of humor and sees the absurdity in human life. You know, he sees it in a very absurd way. And it's very funny. And he looks at Nico as an incredibly talented, beautiful character who's also tragic and addicted to drugs and yet is absurd in many ways, right? I can't recommend this book highly enough either. Both of these are like must reads, Jim. I'm giving them both 3 thumbs up.
This is great.
What you really get is a tale of every character that comes into Nico's orbit is described in minute detail. It's an amazing tragic comedy. I want to thank Mark Jenkins for recommending the book to me because I had not heard of it.
What interests me about that is, you know, it's sort of, you know, rock star narrative,
yeah,
right? The idea of the sort of troubled person and finding their own like inner demons and all that. But as you were saying, this went on for a long time.
I mean, this
was somebody who really battled this for much longer than most people could sustain it, right?
Many years that she survived. And, she, you know, in the book, she's essentially a survivor, yet she comes in contact with all these characters, you know, during this time and is still making music and they're still touring because that's the way they made money. And Nico needed money because Nico had a habit and Nico had to feed the habit. So, and there are scenes in the book that you just think that are like, you know, this is like an incredible rock and roll scene. I can't even imagine this. And one of the best scenes, Jim, is when John Cale shows up to produce Nico's last studio album, Camera Obscura, which came out in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Cale was suffering from a problem or two himself. He wasn't, you know, the healthy, skinny Welsh guy that we see these days.
Right.
So here's James Young's description of when Cale first enters the scene. He shows up in the drummer's apartment where they're all going to live during the recording of Camera Obscura.
Okay.
He writes, "Did's living room was suddenly full of him. He commandeered the coffee table, emptied a wrap of Coke, and carved out 4 massive lines. One for me, one for Did's, and 2 for himself. I don't think we'd even said hello yet. He pulled a video cassette from his overcoat pocket. It was one of those clanging live shows between me, Did's, Tony, and poor Nico. After less than a minute, he pressed stop. 'What's this called?' he asked. 'Strangers on a stage?' It was god-awful, I had to admit. Nico was fighting to be heard. The rest of us, ignoring her completely, showing off our skills, selling our wares. No one at any time had stopped to listen. 'Where's the drummer?' he asked. 'Oh, yes, he's doing a stretch on the Pina Colada circuit in the Bahamas,' Did said. 'That's a pity,' said Cale. 'He's the only one who plays in time.'" Cale was clearly nuts, but it made a change to be working with someone who had energy and who was both gifted and dedicated to his profession. Nico had an inherent talent, her voice, her persona, but she was lazy and morose. Cale, on the other hand, possessed a skill that he'd worked at and a set of creative principles that he'd tested and honed down rigorously into one simple aesthetic credo. Keep it simple. But of course, they don't keep it simple, Jim. It gets pretty complicated in the studio.
That's right.
Cale apparently was also a conspiracy theorist and would not let anyone into the studio except for the teenager from the pub down the street that delivered the 2 cases of beer every night that Cale required to do the studio sessions. So it's a fascinating, hilarious, and there's a lot of human drama and sympathy in the book, and just it's one of the best things I've ever read.
All right, wow, one of the best.
One of the best. Wow. I'd put it right up there. I would read it again. Yeah. All right.
Well,
yeah.
You may have to because you said you're out of books.
I'm
now,
out
right?
of books, so I have to read it again.
So we would love to hear your suggestions, what Patrick should read next. You're looking for like rock biographies,
rock
right?
Rock biographies yes. is where we're talking. Yeah, yes. I'll read anything.
Yes. Okay.
At least the first 100 pages anyway.
So the way you can do that is you can, number one, call our phone line. It's called the Suburban Party Line. It is 612-440-1984. And you can leave a message.
Yep.
Because we like that. We'll put you on the show.
We love that.
You can also email us, rock@suburbspod.com.
Yes, you can.
And you can make suggestions there. Or you can find us on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those are @suburbspod. You can make suggestions there. The other thing you could do is just like drive over, bring a book over.
That'd
right?
be fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. Meet me at the library.
That's right. So there are some options for you. Some other things you can do just because you like the show, apparently, yeah. is you can visit our website, which is suburbspod.com. You'll find Patrick's reviews, maybe like a little mini review or something like
yeah,
that there,
I'm
right?
Start doing
okay,
that. Yeah.
All right. That'd be good.
Yep.
And then the other thing you can do is tell your friends about the show and tell them they can find it on iTunes or Audioboom or Stitcher or TuneIn. I think I've just about covered everything.
Exhausted the possibilities.
Here,
yeah.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm. What we'll do, please listen again tomorrow and
every day.
Every day. And what we'll do is we'll play out with Nico's last song from her last concert.
Oh,
the
fabulous.
Song is called You Forget to Answer. Mm.
Okay.
I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Heavy metal bands.